On the ground in Haiti, the gangs remain in charge. The unrest on the streets there bringing new fears here of a mass migration event.
As a Florida man, I'm deeply concerned about this wave of people that we're about to have, that we are having, coming from Haiti, and it will accelerate.
We are ready if a mass migration, if we need to deal with a mass migration. We did a full walkthrough of our contingency plan on Gitmo last summer.
Gitmo, or Guantanamo Bay, is just about 200 miles from Haiti, and also part of a new plan by the Biden administration to process Haitian migrants should there be a mass exodus, which so far there is no evidence of. But in 2021, following the assassination of Haiti's president, about 15,000 migrants fled to the southern border, setting up camp for days in Del Rio, Texas. Border security since that time becoming an even greater issue, with record numbers of migrants coming to the United States from all across the globe.
Good morning.
Now, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has directed emergency services to deploy more than 250 officers and soldiers and more than a dozen air and sea craft to the southern coast of Florida, with law enforcement in his state expressing concerns.
We're very vulnerable here on the Treasure Coast. We don't have enough federal resources on the water. They do the best they can. We know from experience they will run, they will hide, and we will have a complex law enforcement issue.
Especially since it's turtle nesting season, which means people who live along the beach are asked to keep the lights turned off. The latest estimates show more than 350,000 people have been internally displaced in Haiti, with authorities at the border it shares with the Dominican Republic reportedly sending back hundreds of undocumented Haitians every day, a sign to them they will not be welcomed no matter how much the situation deteriorates. In Washington, I'm Christine Frizzell.
It's a criminal enterprise, and so many it's a criminal enterprise. Saudi Arabia giving $25 million, Qatar, all of these countries. You talk about women and women's rights. So these are people that push gays off business, off buildings. These are people that kill women and treat women horribly, and yet you take their money. So I'd like to ask you right now, why don't you give back the money that you've taken from certain countries that treat certain groups of people so horribly? Why don't you give back the money? I think it would be a great gesture.
Well,
because she takes a tremendous amount of money, and you take a look at the people of Haiti. I was at a little Haiti the other day in Florida, and I want to tell you, they hate the Clintons, because what's happened in Haiti with the Clinton Foundation is a disgrace, and you know it. And they know it, and everybody knows it.
Secretary Clinton.
Well, very quickly, we at the Clinton Foundation spend 90% of all the money that is donated on behalf of programs of people around the world and in our own country. I'm very proud of that. We have the highest rating from the watchdogs that follow foundations. And I'd be happy to compare what we do with the Trump Foundation, which took money from other people and bought a 6-foot portrait of Donald. I mean, who does that? It just was astonishing. But when it comes to Haiti, Haiti is the poorest country in our hemisphere. The earthquake and the hurricanes, it has devastated Haiti. Bill and I have been involved in trying to help Haiti for many years. The Clinton Foundation raised $30 million to help Haiti after the catastrophic earthquake and all of the terrible problems the people there had. We've done things to help small businesses, agriculture, and so much else. And we're going to keep working to help Haiti because it's an important part of the American
They don't want you to help.
Every reason to be mad because the Clintons have destroyed Haiti for the decades. And, you know, they pretend to be our friends when in reality they are our number one enemies. You know, there are some other people who clearly behave like they don't like us. So it's easy for us to protect ourselves against them because we know they are our enemies. But the Clintons are even more dangerous because they pretend to be our friends when in reality they're destroying Haiti.
Because I heard that the Clinton Foundation and all these other organizations gave over $6 billion to Haiti for the relief effort, especially during the kind of natural disasters that you guys have gone through. Is that true?
No, it's more than true. The money is much more than $6 billion. You see, after the earthquake, countries around the world donate billions of dollars. The amount was much larger than $6 billion. And Bill Clinton was in charge of the money. And not only people around the world, but also American celebrities donate a lot of money to rebuild Haiti. And hundreds of homes were destroyed after the earthquake. And if you can believe, the people are still living under tents. That's unacceptable. And not only they held the money, they kept the money, but Haiti had enough resources for them to be very comfortable. Haiti have oil, more oil than Venezuela. Nobody's talking about. Haiti have gold. We have one of the largest gold mines in the Caribbean. So, and they let the world, nobody's saying anything about our gold. And who do you think is in charge of our gold right now? The contract. Tony Radom, Hillary Clinton's brother. Wow. He's got a 26 years contract. And then also Haiti used to produce, we used to produce our own rice. We didn't have to buy rice overseas. Bill Clinton destroyed our rice so his brother can sell the rice from Arkansas. Yeah. Wow. So they're doing a lot of things. Right now, if there's a millionaire or a billionaire who wants to do business in Haiti, they cannot do anything unless they check with the Clintons. The Clintons are the ones who's running Haiti. Yeah. And we are living in the 21st century. We are the first black people who liberate ourselves from the French rule. We fought three empires, the British, the Spanish, the French. So it's unacceptable for us to be occupied right now. They're dropping disease in Haiti. They're stealing our money. They're stealing our resources. So we are out here. We are outraged for the crimes of the Clintons. Hillary Clinton have too much criminal records. She have no business running for president, especially for the news that came out in the email. Find out that the DNC made all these tricks in order to favor Hillary Clinton.
Is when it comes to Hillary Clinton's brother, how was he able to get that contract? How were the Clintons allowed to have such control of Haiti?
It's a family affair. Bill Clinton, the United Nations named him the chief guy who was in charge of rebuilding Haiti, and then while Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. So it's a family thing. Chelsea Clinton, all the Clinton Foundation, they're just stealing money. And most of the money, I can tell you right now, I know they have a lot of speech for money around the world and for Wall Street, but most of the money they have right now is from Haiti, from the Haitians. And when they're letting the world know we are poor, let me give you one simple example. If you are super rich, and then I would go and tell the whole world that you are poor for years, for decades, and then everybody believes you're poor, and then I would come out and steal your money. And then you go and let everybody know I stole your money. They're going to think you're crazy. Because everybody knows, the world knows Haiti is the poorest country. When we are not, we are rich. Haiti used to call the island of pearl. Haiti is still rich. So there are Haitian lawyers, Haitian doctors everywhere who wants, they are millionaires, who wants to go and spend their money in Haiti. But the United States government, not only they're stealing our resources, our money, they create kidnapping. Now we are even afraid to go to Haiti. You cannot walk in the streets in Haiti. And then what, the Clintons, they own the hotel, they go everywhere, they do whatever they want. This is unacceptable. I myself, I'm ready to die. I want the whole world to know who the Clintons are. This has to stop. This has to have to stop. It's time for us to stand up. We cannot take this any longer.
Amazing information. Where can people find out more about the resources of how the Clintons ultimately now control Haiti? Is there a website? Is there any other information that you want to share?
You can go to YouTube. You're going to see our videos. You can put you can put Haitian American Joseph Matthew. Yeah. And then you're going to see the first video would be me exposing the Clintons in front of the Trump Tower. We know, so we have a lot of videos.
Because we saw the investigations into where a lot of the relief funds for Haiti came into, and it ultimately went nowhere to the people but big multinational corporations, and a lot of the people who are still dealing with that natural disaster never got any relief because all the money that was funneled into them, even through the Red Cross, even through the Clinton Global Initiative, which the Clinton Global Initiative sometimes uses and brags, like, look, we helped out Haiti. We did this for Haiti. What did they do for Haiti, and what's the current situation there?
What have the Clinton, not only Haiti, what have the Clinton done with their foundation? They don't have anyone. They're just enriching themselves. Going, stealing people's money, resources, that's what they do. We're asking friends, the American friends, to stand up with us. This is unacceptable. We cannot allow this to happen. We are living in the 21st century. We cannot allow a liar, a crooked, a thief to be president. We cannot allow that to happen. If that happened, I would have no respect for America or United States anymore. Yeah. Because I used to believe America was the greatest country in the world, but there is no more justice anymore. Yeah. Because the American justice is crooked. Look how they're supporting Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. This is unacceptable. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the information. Thank you so much for the passion. A lot of people in America do not know this. Is there any other information you want to leave us with when it comes to the Clintons, when it comes to the situation in Haiti right now?
Well, other information I can tell you, you need to go and Google yourself to find out about our resources, you know, what's really happening in Haiti. And right now, even though there's a lot of poverty in Haiti, but there's two sides in Haiti. There is a bourgeois who's living in Haiti. Haiti's not all poor. Haiti, there's a lot of Haitians, they don't even come here. They go to Europe. They go to Italy on vacation. They go to France. They're the one who's holding the wealth of Haiti, and then they're the one that the Clintons are supporting, because as long they let the peasant Haitian suffering, they are under the tents, and they're okay. As long the bourgeois are okay, that's why they separate the money, the relief money. So all this corruption needs to be stopped. There's too much corruption in the government. Too much corruption. So all my life, I believe America is a country where you have justice, you have freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, but I don't see it anymore. So we have too much resources for us to be suffering right now. One last thing. You see, the Clintons, they don't like black people. They pretend to like us. Bill Clinton signed more laws to incarcerate, to put black people in jail. That's a fact. It's been in the news. All the Democrats are doing for the blacks. The blacks, some of them are waking up right now. All they do is vote for Democrats. The Democrats, all they're doing is more welfare, more jails, more food stamps. We need more than that. We need opportunities. Many of us are educated. We need more schools. And then a lot of black people are in jail right now because of Bill Clinton. You know, all the crime bills, NAFTA, everything. So we are not allowed to, right now we don't even have a president. If we choose a president, they don't want, The Clintons want to be the one who choose a president for us. That's unacceptable. We don't even have a, we cannot have we don't have an election right now because of the Clintons. This needs to be stopped because they chose the one that we had before was Michel Martelly. He was a crackhead, a guy who's putting down his pen doing all corruption. He's the one that the Clintons support. And then on his administration, the Clinton was allowed to steal billions of dollars in Haiti. So this is why they do not want us to choose a president of our own. We need to govern our own country. We need to be able to trade with other countries because we have gold, we have uranium, we have oil, we have marble, we have everything. So it's time for us, just leave us alone. Stop saying we are poor. We don't even need help from the United States. We have enough resources to trade with China, with other countries, because we are the first black republic Haitian who freed ourselves from slavery. We even fought for Americans' independence. But nobody wants to give us credit for what we have done. So I'm personally sick and tired of it, and all the Haitians are sick and tired of it. So I thank you for hearing our cry, because we need more Americans to support what to support us to expose what the Clintons are doing to our country.
Well, let me talk about the children.
Yeah.
The children, tens of thousands of them, maybe hundreds of thousands, have been separated from their families, many of them. Families dead, families lost, families moved out. What is being done to corral these children, to register them, to make sure no further harm comes to them?
It's one of the biggest problems that we have, and this morning during the coordination meeting in the international community, I addressed the question of the adoption, because I have a lot of a petition for that, but they have to be very prudent because there is a lot of cautious, because there is a lot of traffic in that
illegal child trafficking.
Yeah, even if it's it seems to be legal, but a lot of organizations, they come and they say there were children on the street who are going to bring them to the States, and we have already reports of a lot of trafficking, even of organ trafficking.
Of organ trafficking?
Yeah.
Now
already.
Of the victims of the earthquake?
Yeah. So,
do you know that for sure?
Yeah, I know that for sure, and it was discussed in Montreal during the conference.
And do you know for sure that children are being trafficked now?
There is children trafficking for children and adult person also, because they need all type of organs. So,
no, but I mean live children, are they being trafficked now?
The report I received.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Nadia Kanji in Baltimore. A Haitian special committee on Monday said there was a high level of fraud in Haiti's presidential elections last October, enough even to recommend nullifying the results. The committee found that there were 628,000 zombie votes or untraceable votes. The election was also backed by over $33 million in U.S. funding. Our next guest, Nicholas Barry Shaw, has been following the issue, and more specifically, the role the U.S. and Hillary Clinton has played in the debacle. He says she triggered massive political unrest by throwing her weight behind former President Michel Martelly in the 2010 election, who stepped down earlier this year and who many felt was corrupt. Nicholas is a Haiti solidarity activist from Montreal. He just wrote an article for Jacobin titled Clinton's Long Shadow, Hillary Clinton May Never Be Called to Account for Her Role in Haiti's Ongoing Political Crisis. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me on, Nadia.
The Verification Commission essentially reveals that the U.S. funded a fraudulent election. Can you give us an idea of what the current situation is on the ground in Haiti and how the U.S. is responding to the results of the Verification Committee?
You know, this is kind of the result that everyone was expecting in Haiti. Everyone was hoping for, in any case. It confirms what many different Haitian observer groups demonstrated. It confirms what, you know, we saw when I was down there with a group of international observers for the October 25th election, that there was a huge number of votes being cast using these kind of political party accreditation cards, and that they really kind of swamped the results, and that the results were not credible. So the reaction has been, I think, favorable from most of the parties, except for those close to President Michel Martelly. And so former President Michel Martelly and his party, Parti Calais Haïtien, has not, obviously been very enthusiastic about the commission from the beginning. They're the party that's suspected of having organized most of the fraud, and they were the ones who had their candidate, Jovenel Moïse, in first place in the presidential election, which the commission has now recommended to be rerun. So they're obviously unhappy, and they're seeking in every way to discredit the election. As for the U.S., since the interim authorities were sworn in February, the U.S. and the other major aid donors to Haiti have cut off all non-humanitarian aid to the interim government. And the country was already in a kind of financial and budgetary crisis before that because of the mismanagement and corruption of the Martelly regime. So, you know, it's just kind of adding to the pressure on the government to solve the elections crisis quickly and in a way that will please the U.S. So this isn't over by any stretch of the imagination.
Can you tell me about Clinton's role more specifically in Haiti?
Yeah, she was heavily involved in Haiti actually before the earthquake. Haiti was made kind of a centerpiece of the State Department's foreign policy after she took over in 2009. And that kind of role was really amplified after the earthquake and with the huge internationally funded reconstruction effort. In particular, she played a key role in getting Michel Martelly elected in 2011. You know, in the 2010-2011 elections, there were, you know, again, accusations of fraud. There were very low turnout. And according to the contested official results, Martelly had finished in third place. And so he wasn't going to the runoff. But Clinton personally intervened. She flew down to Haiti in the midst of the Arab Spring in January 2011. She made a trip to Haiti and put an enormous amount of pressure on then-President Préval to change the election results, to remove his candidate from the race and put in Martelly, because she liked, you know, the kind of program he was offering, this kind of extremely pro-business, pro-foreign investment program that he was pushing. And Préval eventually relented under enormous pressure from the U.S., and Martelly, in the second round, became president. And all throughout his term, you know, he was supported just extremely, extremely closely by the U.S. ambassador. First Kenneth Merton and then Pam White, who was appointed by, both of whom were appointed by Hillary Clinton. So his regime really was a you know, total creation of Hillary Clinton.
You mentioned in your article that Clinton is to blame for what you call Martelly's disastrous presidency. But after the earthquake in 2010, the Clinton Foundation raised $30 million for reconstruction projects, and she was involved in industrial projects that helped create jobs for a lot of Haitians. Some would say she supported Martelly's pro-business outlook so that she could work on these reconstruction efforts. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, one of the things that Hillary Clinton did with regards to Haiti while she was Secretary of State was she initiated an attempt to block a raise of the minimum wage for Haitian workers in 2009. So the minimum wage was going to be raised from a paltry 26 cents an hour to, you know, the princely sum of 61 cents an hour. And because this didn't fit with the kind of economic development policies that Hillary Clinton at State was pushing for Haiti, she had her ambassador oppose this move. And so they teamed up with the Haitian economic elite and with foreign multinationals that were working in Haiti, Hanes Brand, Levi's, and others who had subcontracting arrangements in Haiti. And they successfully fought this minimum wage increase. You know, and that's something Bernie Sanders, during this campaign, he made a short kind of press release on his website about this, but the whole issue of Hillary's experience or foreign policy experience as it manifested in Haiti really hasn't been picked up by the Sanders campaign, I think, as much as it should, because her record is really quite appalling if you look at it closely. And it's something that the Trump campaign is actually starting to do. So recently at a Trump rally, one of his campaign advisors read kind of chapter and verse from this new book that just came out called Clinton Cash, written by a Republican journalist named Peter Schweitzer. And there's a large section in that book about how people close to the Clinton family, including Hillary's own brother, Tony Rodham, have benefited from the reconstruction efforts and benefited from U.S. policy in Haiti. And he said, you know, we're gonna keep bringing up this issue until the media covers it. And it's obviously, you know, they see the value in mining Hillary's misadventures in Haiti for political gain. I don't think the Trump campaign cares a whit about Haiti, but they understand that, you know, what she did there was really quite dubious.
Haiti.
These are some of the 33 Haitian children an American Baptist group allegedly tried to unlawfully take out of the country on Saturday. Orphans and abandoned children, victims of the earthquake, some as young as 2 months old. The Haitian authorities stopped the bus they were on as they were about to cross into neighboring Dominican Republic. With them were 10 Americans. They are now in police custody. And they reportedly say they were planning to set up an orphanage for the children in the Dominican Republic.
Our understanding was that we were told by a number of people, including Dominican authorities, that we would be able to bring the children across. I understand that. Sir, that's the mistake obviously we made, is we did not understand that there was additional paperwork required.
The group insists this was an act of charity, not profit, with the consent of the children's families.
I saw that family members were giving them away because the parents were dead, and the family members couldn't support them, so the families were giving their children up so they could be cared for and to study.
The earthquake has left tens of thousands of children homeless. And the chaos it brought makes Haiti ripe for human trafficking. That's why the government imposed tight restrictions on adoption earlier this month. Restrictions it says the American group has violated. Zaina Howard, Al Jazeera.
The hysteria related to Donald Trump is off the charts, and I think it exposes the raw politics behind it. I have a couple of points I'd like to make. The only president who I am aware of who actually assassinated American citizens was President Obama. So perhaps the ranking member should revisit her history books. I have an article here from the ACLU stating the ACLU and CCR have filed a lawsuit challenging the government's targeted killing of 3 U.S. citizens in drone strikes far from any armed conflict zone. In Alawi versus Panetta, the group charges that the U.S. government's killings of U.S. citizens in Yemen last year violated the Constitution's fundamental guarantee against the deprivation of life without due process of law. The killings under Obama were part of a broader program of targeted killing by the United States outside of the context of armed conflict and based on vague legal standards, a closed executive process, and evidence never presented to the courts. And as for kids in cages, again, that was President Obama. Several former Obama administration officials took to social media and news outlets last month to explain a gallery of years-old photos that showed immigrant children sleeping in shoddy conditions at a government-run holding facility in Arizona. The images, which the Associated Press first published in 2014 during the Obama administration, resurfaced recently for reasons that remain unclear and quickly prompted viral outrage on Twitter. One particularly disturbing image showed two children sleeping on mattresses on the floor inside what appeared to be a cage. A number of prominent liberals and even a former Obama administration official shared the photos, mistakenly believing that they depicted the Trump administration's treatment of immigrant children who were forcibly separated from their parents. Jon Favreau, who worked as a speechwriter for former President Barack Obama, tweeted, "This is happening right now, and the only debate that matters is how we force our government to get these kids back to their families as fast as humanly possible." Favreau said he later deleted the tweet after social media users pointed out that the photos were taken during the Obama administration. So, I think it's important to correct the record as to actually who assassinated American citizens, being President Obama, and it being President Obama who kept kids in cages. Now, as this committee uncovers more and more censorship activities by the federal government, one thing we are wrestling with is accountability for these bad actors violating the First Amendment. They are already not elected by the citizens, so don't have to answer to the electorate, and certain accountability statutes, such as 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, only apply to state employees, which is why Mr. Bishop and I have introduced the Censorship Accountability Act to actually hold federal employees personally liable for violating the First Amendment of American citizens. But even in those circumstances where one can go to courts for relief, that requires a great deal of time and resources to prove liability, harm, and then obtain relief. It is apparent from the ongoing Missouri versus Biden case that all of these bad actors, it makes it difficult to eventually hold them accountable. Ms. Richardson, I highlight these things to show that accountability can be hard to achieve for injured Americans. Do you think this could be further exacerbated if certain activities that facilitate censorship are increasingly done by AI systems rather than government employees?
I do. I think that what these tools open the potential for is broader censorship and done without having to have an individual employee sitting there doing it. They're able to flag posts at a larger scale. So I do think the fact that the NSF is funding them is concerning.
Well, and the upscaling of AI technology can provide censorship operations, and the scope of it is absolutely astonishing. For example, in its pitch to the NSF, Meaden stated that it was using AI to monitor 750,000 blogs and media articles daily, as well as to mine data from the major social media platforms. That just gives you an idea of the absolute scope of what AI could do for violating people's First Amendment rights. In your testimony, Ms. Richardson, you outlined in great detail the number of grants, the large sums, and the various number of partners that the federal dollars are going to censor American citizens in violation of the First Amendment. What can the proliferation of this type of technology do to the censorship industrial complex, which has already been uncovered, if it is not properly overseen for beneficial development?
Well, I think what we've seen through, as you just brought up, the Missouri v. Biden case and Twitter files and many other aspects, is this increasing involvement of the federal government with private parties in order to censor speech. And this is just another example of that, federal government funding universities, funding companies to develop these tools that allow censorship at a broader scale.
Thank you, and I yield back.
The lady yields back. For our witnesses, we have 10 more minutes. I know you've been sitting there for a while, but if you can hang with us 10 more, and we'll have a few maybe closing comments from the ranking member myself, and then we'll conclude our hearing. I want to recognize our two newest members. First, the gentleman from Ohio is recognized for 5 minutes.
I thank the chairman, thank our witnesses. It is an honor to be on the Weaponization Committee. It's disappointing that Congress needed to create this committee, but it definitely needed to be done. The American people rightly recognize that our own government is being turned against its citizens. The Bill of Rights was put in place by the Founding Fathers fundamentally because in the first days of the Constitution, the concern was that the federal government would somehow be used and turned against not just the states, but the citizens of those states. And today we're seeing the Bill of Rights being trampled in every kind of way. We see freedom of religion. Oh, you can have it, just don't exercise it. Freedom of speech, the right to assemble, all of the First Amendment trampled. The Second Amendment, people want to trample it. I would say the Third has been trampled as well. You have to provide provision for government on everything from a cell phone to a laptop to your car. Now, maybe even digital ID. All kinds of things. People are supporting every kind of infringement, warrantless spying on American citizens, government agencies buying data that they would otherwise have to get a warrant or a subpoena, and on down the list through the entire Bill of Rights. And the question is, what are we going to do about it? And I think this committee is a good response to it. Today, we're focusing on AI. And when you think about AI, how do you assess, you know, whether the algorithm has got it right? Is it a question of which speech gets canceled? Because that seems to be the case. And the reality is, while some of this activity went on under the previous administration, in the early days of the Biden administration, they wanted to formalize it. They didn't call it a Ministry of Truth. They came up with the Disinformation Governance Board. But, Mr. Lukianoff, what's the state of play in recognizing when free speech is, frankly, people are having their free speech rights canceled?
I would turn us to the less sexy and less sci-fi scenario of what's going on American college campuses. I feel like I'm on the free speech left. I feel like I've been screaming at the sky trying to get people to take seriously the threats to free speech on campus for a long time now. 2020 and 2021 were the highest number of professors fired, and they were on the left and the right, to be clear, that I'm aware of since probably the two-year period since probably the 1930s. And this is something that is not getting sufficient attention. Now, who programs AI? Overwhelmingly elite the college graduates, who actually, when you poll them, have some pretty distressing ideas about freedom of speech. Think about the idea of us all living on the most repressive college campus, and that's why we should be afraid of what AI potentially could become if we don't actually take this issue a little more seriously.
Yeah, so thank you about that, for that. And when you think about, AI and the language models that are used, how do you know what the primary sources are? You know, when you're looking at the way that speech is canceled on campus, there are, you know, some people are disfavored. Maybe some campuses won't allow Congressman Jordan on their campus, or maybe some won't allow our ranking member on campus. And they might view it as good because the other person got canceled. We can all recognize that as some limitation of speech, but when you look at the algorithm, you just know what got, you don't really get to see what was filtered. So, Mr. Fang, Ms. Richardson, do you have thoughts about the, you know, how we detect this kind of activity in AI?
Well, look, it's not my role as a journalist to prescribe any particular solution, but I would want to point at the example in the UK where they have a little bit stronger data laws. A lot of the people who were censored during the pandemic for simply criticizing the efficacy of some of the vaccines, discussing some of these pandemic lockdowns, the way that they were able to find out that they were surveilled and then censored is that they were able to make requests with some of the UK's data laws for the government and these private sector firms to provide their own data to them. And that's how they found out. We don't have those same strong protections in the US. Perhaps it's worth looking at stronger rights to your own data, better algorithmic transparency. This is worth debating.
Thank you for that, and I'll yield the balance of my time to the chairman.
We'll start with opening statements, then move into our witnesses. The chair now recognizes himself for an opening statement. Big government was colluding with big tech to censor Americans. That's the first thing we learned. But now it's big government colluding with big banks and big business to spy on everything Americans buy, every place they go, everything they do. Big government wants your financial data because it's full of sensitive information about you. Our investigation started when an FBI whistleblower, George Hill, came forward and talked to the committee. Mr. Hill was supervisory intelligence analyst at the FBI, up in the Boston field office, told the committee that the FBI got information from Bank of America. Specifically, it received a list of any customer who made purchases in the Washington, D.C. area January 5th through 7th, 2021. The whistleblower supervisor, special agent in charge of the Boston field office, Mr. Bonavolanta, corroborated Mr. Hill's testimony when he spoke to the committee. And so did Steve Jensen, the FBI's Domestic Terrorism Operations Section Chief. But it wasn't just purchase data around a specific date that the FBI got from Bank of America. That was actually also overlaid with any firearm purchase at any time. And how did the FBI get this information? They asked for it. In fact, you can see on the display on the screen here, the email that was sent. The FBI told Bank of America, to recap our morning call, we are prepared to action immediately the following threshold customers confirmed as transacting business in Washington, D.C. between these specific dates. So if you're in Washington, D.C., visiting your kids, maybe visiting your aunt, or maybe just a friend, the FBI wanted to know about every single purchase you made. And if you're a gun owner, look out, you're going to the top of the list. For simply exercising your Second Amendment right, you're on the FBI's target list. Never forget, the federal government got this information without any process. No warrant, And frankly, no notification. The bank didn't tell the customer that we're handing this information over to the FBI, the most powerful law enforcement agency in the world. Now, these FBI agents, Mr. Hill, Mr. Bonavolato, Mr. Jensen, they all said this was wrong and, in fact, sent the information back to FBI headquarters in D.C. So that's how our investigation began. But since then, we continued to investigate, but since then, we've learned that the financial surveillance was broader and there was actually a specific objective. The federal government is building profiles on the American people. And the profile isn't based on criminal conduct, it's based on political beliefs. And if you got the wrong political beliefs, well, you're potentially a domestic violent extremist. Now, how are they actually doing this? What are the mechanics of this? There's this entity we've discovered called the Domestic Security Alliance Council, kind of Orwellian in sound and title, the DSAC. And this is an entity where the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, works with 650 of the largest companies in the world. These companies have to do over $1 billion in revenue a year. They represent 2/3 of the gross domestic product of the United States economy. And they work through this controlled access portal. We'll put that on the screen here. What are they sharing in this secret portal? Well, we're not exactly sure because it's secret. But we do know that they share some information, share reports. And one of the reports we got, called a liaison information report, said this: Any American who opposes firearm legislation, the easing of immigration restrictions, and COVID mandates is someone banks should be watching because, again, they might be an extremist. Now stop and think about that for a second. I mean, just in other words, if you're against gun registration, you're for a secured border, you oppose lockdowns and vaccine mandates, you're a domestic violent extremist, according to the FBI, and the government should get your data, should get your financial data. It actually gets worse. The federal government and banks also use what they call merchant category codes to flag Americans that shop at places like Bass Pro Shop and Cabela's. They flagged Americans who bought religious text. We can show you that one too. Because everybody knows if you want a secure border and you oppose COVID lockdowns, then you probably shop at Bass Pro Shops and you read your Bible. And of course, all that makes you an extremist. Literally, that is the logic that you see displayed from the information we've been able to gather thus far in our investigation. Now remember, these are also the same folks who just a couple years ago told us if you're a parent showing up in a school board meeting, you're a terrorist. If you're a pro-life Catholic, you're an extremist. Now, of course, if you oppose lockdowns, vaccine mandates, want a secure border, don't want gun registration, you're in that category as well. This is scary where things are headed. We've seen the censorship. Now we see what's happening with big banks and big government relative to your financial data. Again, all this being done with no process, no warrant, no notification to the customer that the banks are actually supposed to serve. Big government's not supposed to use big tech to censor Americans, and big government shouldn't be working with big banks to target Americans for behavior that is legal and constitutional. That's the concern. That's why we're having this hearing. We will get to our guest here in a second. But with that, I would yield to the ranking member for an opening statement before we get to our witnesses.
This has been going on for weeks now.
Tonight, another migrant landing on the Treasure Coast.
We've intercepted close to 700 vessels.
Wow.
That has resulted in the repatriation of close to 14,000 illegal aliens. So the boats that come, most of them get intercepted and turned around. Obviously, there's, you know, we do what we can. The Coast Guard does what it can. But we've since the situation in Haiti has deteriorated, we've plussed up even more. So we have an unprecedented array of folks that are in the water. We have National Guard, Florida State Guard, Florida Fish and Wildlife, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Highway Patrol people are out there helping the Coast Guard. But I think it would be good if the Biden administration would plus up the resources for the Coast Guard. They don't have enough resources to be able to protect our shorelines. But I think we've sent a message over the last year and a half with what we've done, is that it's not worth getting in a boat and doing that because the chance of you making it is very small. Yeah. What's most likely to happen is you're going to get intercepted and go back. And I think that's part of the reason we have not actually seen some major uptick in vessels from what we had been seeing recently, because I do think it's the case. If you want to come to the U.S. from Haiti, the easiest way is not to take a boat anymore where you're likely to get intercepted, but to go to Mexico and then just walk across the border. And that's how most of the Haitians who've come into the United States under Biden have actually come in through the southern border. We are not getting great cooperation with much of the federal government, unfortunately. I will say this, though, and, you know, we're vetting people because we're not just going to bring people if we don't know who they are. So we're making sure they're Floridians, U.S. citizens, or have a right to come, whatever. It has been like pulling teeth to deal with some of these federal agencies. And the reality is, you have an easier time getting into this country illegally than you do just to be rescued as a United States citizen. How the hell does that make any sense?
And Governor, you've been so gracious to send some of your men and women from Florida, whether it was Fish and Wildlife, National Guard, as well as some of the state police, to Texas, my home state of Texas, to help us secure the border there.
Yeah, I was the first state back in 2021 to do it. Now that the Supreme Court has allowed this SB4 to go in, I'm interested to see if our guys can be helpful, because I think that what the missing piece of this had been, yes, people would come across the Texas-Mexico border. We'd have people, Texas DPS, whoever, would stop them. But once Border Patrol got them, they would release them into the interior of this country. If they can stop, arrest, and turn them back across the border, that is going to be a huge, huge deterrent. So I'm definitely supportive of that mission. They can count on us to be supportive. And the thing about it is, it's an issue for our country. If you don't have borders, you don't have a country. So I think all states should be concerned about that. But the reality is, this border issue affects all states.
That's right.
We have people. I just signed a flurry of bills to crack down on illegal aliens for people that have been deported before, and then they come back into this country and commit crimes. In Florida, they are getting the book thrown at them if they do that. But anyone coming across the border is not likely to stay in Texas. They're likely to go to other states. Yep. So we all have an interest in fighting back.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And you famously transported some to Martha's Vineyard, and you're making that vow as well. If there are Haitian migrants coming into Florida, next thing you know, they could wind up in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
But I will say this. We do have our transport program also that's going to be operational. So Haitians land in the Florida Keys, their next stop very well maybe Martha's Vineyard.
Governor DeSantis is taking credit for two airplanes full of migrants that landed at Martha's Vineyard last night. Video shows the men and women deboarding that plane in Massachusetts. The governor's office says that relocation is part of the state's program to transport illegal immigrants to sanctuary destinations. Florida's budget has $12 million set aside to remove migrants from the state of Florida.
I think that the states really have no other choice to do that at that point. It's a little bit different for a maritime state like us. That's why we really have to get them before they reach the shores, and that's why we're working so hard to do that. We did interdict the one boat that had the 25 Haitians that were trying to come illegally with guns and drugs.
The border crisis is stretching out to the Sunshine State. Florida could see its own surge of migrants as the chaos in Haiti rages on. The Department of Defense alerted of a potential maritime mass migration. Florida Congressman Greg Stubbe joins us now. Congressman, good to see you. So, Governor Ron DeSantis says that he's sending Haitian migrants to Martha's Vineyard. It's at least on the table. But I got to ask you, how would Florida handle a rush of migrants in your state, such as we're talking about here?
Well, I tell you, legislators in the state of Florida are going to be watching this Texas case that you just did a really good job of reporting on and see how that's going to be decided. Because if it's decided in favor of the state, Texas being able to defend itself, then other states like Florida will take suit as well. I think we absolutely, as a state, have that ability and that sovereign ability under our Constitution to be able to defend our own borders. Not too long ago, I think it was last week, a ship full of Haitians with guns and drugs was apprehended by the Coast Guard right outside inside Florida waters. We absolutely, as a state, need to have that ability, and I believe we do have that ability constitutionally. So Florida's going to be watching that case as well to see how it's decided, and if it's decided in favor of Texas, which it should be, Florida should take suit very quickly, have a quick session, pass a very similar bill, and do the exact same thing.
Meanwhile, Border Patrol officials are warning agents to prepare for an uptick in the number of Haitian migrants coming into the U.S. The warning comes amid rampant gang violence in the Caribbean nation, and the U.N. estimates heavily armed gangs now control around 80% of the capital of Port-au-Prince. This is forcing thousands of Haitians to flee their homes, and it's not clear just how many are headed here to the U.S.
So this crisis could be coming to the coast. Obviously, it's kind of not an if but when situation. We'll see some migrants from Haiti attempting to come into the United States. Now, which direction that is still remains to be seen. However, we are learning this morning that the Army facility, Guantanamo Bay, might be used if the U.S. Coast Guard ends up interdicting mass migration.
Guantanamo Bay is going to be used if it's Coast Guard. If the Coast Guard interdicts them and the Coast Guard does not allow them to one of our ports in Florida, then it goes to Guantanamo Bay. But those that come up to our southwest border, it's always going to be the Border Patrol that is going to deal with them simply because of the sheer numbers. And no, we do not have the infrastructure to deal with that. We just, anything above 1,000 apprehensions per day, and we're underwater.
But some with intel here on the situation are saying it isn't the coastal sector that needs to be worried here. While many are focusing on these migrants that might be fashioning makeshift boats and arriving at the coast, the president of the Border Patrol Council, Randon Judd, is telling us that the cartels are going to try to push Haitian migrants into the country illegally, exploiting most likely the Del Rio sector, namely Eagle Pass, Texas. Now, that has been working for them. And so why break, you know, what, or why fix what's not broken? So they'll likely try that route again. Now, as you'll remember, more than 2 years ago under the Del Rio International Bridge, where nearly 16,000 Haitian migrants amassed, that infrastructure wasn't in place to handle that many people. And Judd says that the cartels could easily take a page out of that playbook again, with Eagle Pass pretty much being sealed off right now under Governor Abbott's Operation Lone Star. Now, let's give you a look at the numbers of Haitian migrants that we've seen this month when we compare them to last year. Now, we've seen that number more than triple, as more than 4,000 Haitian migrants have been encountered at our land crossings just this month alone. And in February, more than 11,400 migrants from Haiti were encountered so far this month, though it is tracking to be similar. Here's the thing, though. It's going to take 1 to 3 months for these individuals who are currently fleeing to actually get here. Now, Natasha, we can tell you the repatriations are still happening. The U.S. Coast Guard sent back 65 migrants from Haiti just this week, but the repatriation flights are being threatened. Brendan Judd confirming that those could be halted if the unrest continues there, the chaos continues there, because, Natasha, they have to have permission to land those flights back in Haiti.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis joins us now with more. First of all, before we get to this specific case and the drugs and the guns and even night vision equipment, which should scare everybody, let me first take note of the fact you're not even counting on Joe Biden to help you. You just acted, you know, with the situation rapidly deteriorating in Haiti, knowing that the likely outcome of that would be an influx into this country. You didn't go to Joe Biden because you knew that he would not be willing to uphold the laws of our country. You've watched what's been happening in Texas and Arizona and California, and you said, no, it's not going to happen here. What does that say about Joe Biden?
Well, look, Sean, you know, we take matters, we step up and do what we need to do in Florida. I don't expect necessarily to get the help that I think we're entitled to. And what we found over the last several years is the Coast Guard, they do a good job. They're just way under resources. Biden will not provide the number of vessels that they need to interdict all the ships that come. So I did, I've been supplementing their efforts for years now. I did an executive order in January of 2023, so about 15 months ago, where we declared it a state of emergency, and we surged a lot of vessels. So since January of 2023, our state assets have stopped 660 vessels, not all from Haiti, but from other islands in the Caribbean.
and we've interdicted 13,580 illegal aliens. So that's just leading to this point. Then our executive order that we did this week is supplementing those efforts. So we have the strongest protection that our shorelines have ever had. Yes, we did interdict the one boat that had the 25 Haitians that were trying to come illegally with guns and drugs. We have not, though, seen yet a massive influx of boats into our region. And I think part of that is because people know if you take that journey, you're going to get stopped and you're going to end up back where you started. So it's not worth it. One of the things I think that may be different from this situation from when this has happened in years past is Haitians know the easiest way to get into our country is actually not to take a boat and to land illegally in Florida anymore. It's to fly to Mexico and to just walk across the border. There have been tens of thousands of Haitians who have done that illegally. So I think the dynamics are unique, but the bottom line for us is we want to be prepared. I was asked today at our press conference, why are you doing this when there has not actually yet been a massive influx? And I say, what are you supposed to do? Wait for it to happen? So we're putting our assets in place to be able to defend the state.
Well, if you had waited, then the drugs and the guns and the guys with night vision, the 25 that you apprehended, that they would have made it to your shores. That would have been acting too late. This is a predictable outcome that we're going to expect out of Haiti, as politically things have deteriorated very badly there. I hate to give you, I'm sure you probably already know this bad news. You can pretty much be assured that Joe Biden and his Department of Justice will be suing you like they've been suing Greg Abbott and any other state that tries to fill the void and enforce the laws that Joe not only won't enforce, but aids and abets in the breaking of.
Well, I think you're exactly right. So we have the vessels that we're going to interdict, which is important. But one of the things Biden's been doing is he's been abusing this concept of parole, where he's actually flying in illegal aliens and dumping them in different parts of the United States. So, for example, there was the news today of an illegal immigrant from Haiti who was now arrested or accused of sexually assaulting a 15-year-old with disabilities in Massachusetts. And that was somebody that Biden flew into this country, didn't even cross illegally. Biden flew him over the border. So that is a unique circumstance. I don't think we've had any president that has flown in this many illegal aliens into our country. So there's a lot of facets to this, but we are doing what we have every right to do, and that's defend the people of Florida.
Governor, if you did that, if I did that, I can pretty much assure you that we would be arrested, fingerprinted, handcuffed, and we'd be sitting in a jail cell somewhere. That's called human trafficking. It's amazing, but it's also sad. But more importantly, it is extraordinarily dangerous for our country. Especially, look at the countries we know people are coming from, Iran and Syria, Egypt, Afghanistan, China, Russia. Not a good situation, but as the gangs now take over Haiti and that situation worsens, I would assume this is going to get far worse. And I have to assume that you're on top of this and ready for perhaps even a much larger influx, which would mean a lot more interdiction efforts on the part of your, your staff, the people that you have out there on the waterways.
Yes, and then another facet to it, Sean, is we have Florida citizens who are in Haiti and trying to get out. So I've authorized rescue flights like we did.
Thank you guys for checking out the Fundamental Breakdown. This show right here was the show the Democrat lovers, that there is no good side that comes out of the government. And for all my listeners that's been following and been listening, you already know how I talk about the government. And so there's some stuff coming our way that we just not going to be ready for. Because, it's like we just not, as a collective, I'm not saying people individually are not doing things. That's not what I'm saying. But as a collective, we not coming together. We not banding together to stop the things that are coming. I am grateful for the Europeans that are sitting on councils and boards up in the Congress, having these congressional meetings and trying to combat the things that the government has got going on, you know what I'm saying? And just as I'm grateful, you should be grateful too, you know, because we need some people fighting on our behalf that's in the higher ups. But if this stuff is not stopped, I hope that we are getting prepared, because there's some stuff coming. No matter who is president, the government is really not on the people's side the way we would like them to be. But there are people fighting on our behalf. I give them that. But at the end of the day, the government is the government. We gonna be enslaved one form or another. And so, again, like I always say, the only way we can really handle this or combat this is we got to unite. We got to begin to stand as a people, and we have to check the government. You know what I'm saying? It's time for the people to take back rulership. You know what I'm saying? Self-governing, autonomy. And looking at the conditions of the world right there, right now, and looking at what people are focused on, and people are really focused on getting money versus really fighting policies and stuff like that, which is going to have us in a put us in a bad position, because money not going to help you. It's not going to help none of us. And all of us that are getting this bread, you know what I'm saying, at the end of the day, we going to be challenged. And how are we going to be challenged? Because I was listening the other day, and they was talking about how the CBDCs should be ready within 12 months. And with the CBDCs, if the higher-ups that are fighting on the people's behalf, if we can't get back to tangible assets and money being backed by something that is tangible, and we really get put on these CBDCs, which is this digital currencies, and on this digital currency stuff, you better believe the microchip is coming. I don't know how many people are going to be willing to sacrifice their livelihood to avoid getting microchipped, because the more money that we possess, the more it's going to be a hard decision to make whether we get microchipped or not. And it may be easy for a lot of people. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But for me, it's going to be hard. I ain't going to lie to you. And it's going to be hard for me to consider taking a microchip just to hold on to my funds, because I don't want nobody having that much control over my life where a person can just push a button and delete my bank account. Or if I say the wrong thing, they can penalize me and fine me and just take money out of my bank account. Or if they want to, they can take my life with the push of a button because I got a microchip in me that can be detonated. That's not some shit I'm cool with. I don't give a damn how much money I got. I'm still not with that. And just to keep my money, nah, I don't think I'm going to be with that program to where somebody can have that much control over my life. But at the end of the day, that's where things are headed. And the only way that we're not going to go there is that we're going to have to collectively stand. So there's a lot of things headed our way, possibly civil war. So I hope that with all the money that we are getting out here, we're preparing with something, you know, buying some land, getting tillers, creating water systems, you know, buying seeds so that we can grow food. You know what I'm saying? I hope we really doing the things that are necessary, because if we think just getting money is all we need to do in order to survive the shit that's coming, we dead wrong. Because before we can get to a lot of this other stuff, we're going to have to go through the bullshit. And we know the bullshit is coming. We see the migration. We see how there's an influx of immigrants coming into this country. They not coming over here just to throw election polls. No, it ain't about that. Because, again, like I've said before, most likely the election will be canceled. due to Jasar Nassar. If you haven't listened to my show, Jasar Nassar, go check it out. Go check out Jasar Nassar. And it talks about them shutting the government down and people getting a chance to re-elect the entire government all over again, you know. And like I keep saying, like, when this thing shut down, let's leave it down. You know what I'm saying? Although that will put us in a lawless state. And so that's why it's important to know your neighbor. Because we can't go into chaos out here. Because if we go into chaos, which they are banking on, you know what I'm saying? They banking on the American people coming together. They banking on that shit. That's why they bringing all the immigrants over here. Because they like, we gonna cause chaos one way or another. It's gonna be some motherfucking chaos. They banking on this coming together. And which I'm banking on this coming together. You know what I'm saying? But they like, look, we gonna do this shit our way. And so that's the part that should be scary. And so with that being said, get ready. I got a show coming out called The Black Endangered. So when we go into chaos, black people going to be in danger. I'm calling the warning shot so that we can try to have a heads up to try to protect ourselves the best way we can. And, you know, knowledge is power. You know what I'm saying? Especially if you have a heads up on things. So the Black Endangered show is coming. You know, and so let's try to spread these. Let's try to pass information on. You know what I'm saying? We got to pass this information on, you know. Because if you watch TV, which there's a lot of people talking about a lot of shit coming. We all know some shit coming. But you also got a lot of people that's talking just nothing but money. A lot of people going to have wake up and have a bad day. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people going to wake up and have a bad day. And so I hope not, because I love the people. And I want to see us flourish. You know what I'm saying? And hopefully we can flourish. But if not, then shit. Let's die like heroes. You know what I'm saying? There ain't no need going out like suckers. So, you guys, I want to appreciate you guys for coming on. Look out for the Black Endangered Species show. Because that will be dropping soon. With love. I'll talk to you next time.
But the amazing thing is people don't know. The solar eclipse is happening on the very same day as the original plagues of the 3 days of darkness began.
No! Yes. Okay, it's on the very same day.
This one we're doing
now. April 8th is the very day of the 3 days of darkness plagues began in the original of Exodus. Yes. Wow. So when I titled this show tonight, Total Darkness, I was just saying there's so much darkness going on, it almost feels like total darkness. And the eclipse, I was playing on that a little bit, but I did not know this, that's the same day as the 3 days of darkness, which is the ninth plague in the land of Egypt.
Yes.
The plagues when Moses would get ready to take the children of Israel out of Egypt.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Is this a warning then? Is God, it's going, we got the Nineveh and the Jonah towns going through, but I mean, what kind of warning is this?
Great question. Here's the thing. In Genesis 1:14, God declared the sun and the moon were for signs.
Right.
The only signs they can give is eclipses. All right? And the nice thing about eclipses, no false prophet can manipulate it.
No.
Okay? And they speak to every language, tribe, nation, and tongue.
Yep.
They don't need to be translated.
Nope.
Solar eclipse means judgment is coming upon a nation. Lunar eclipse refers to judgment coming upon Israel.
Okay.
Now, get a load of this. There has only been, since we become a nation in 1776, there has only been 8 total solar eclipses that have completely crossed the United States. I'm not talking. talk about one that just clips California or Florida. I'm talking that traverses the whole United States horizontally or vertically. There's only been eight since we became a nation.
Wow.
And guess when they occurred? Two of them occurred during the Revolutionary War. Three of them occurred during the Civil War. Two of them occurred during the Vietnam War. Are we getting a hint of what this means?
Oh, no.
And so now, in the 2000s, that was 2017, and now this one in 2024, and it's like a bullseye. It forms an X right over the United States. Now, here's what's amazing. Of those eight, only one, which was the one 7 years ago, it only crossed the United States and no other country. The other ones crossed Mexico and Canada and U.S. or something like that. But the United States was singled out.
Which just
one 7 years ago.
Yes.
Once.
Wow.
And now we have April 8th on Nissan One. That Nissan One is the same day the glory of God fell. It's the same day of the inauguration ceremony of Moses' tabernacle. Okay? This is when this eclipse crosses these two places in the United States. And it's definitely God wants to communicate with us. People have to understand. God wants to communicate. These eclipses are communications directly from God warning us of what's coming. But the amazing thing is people don't know. The solar eclipse is happening on the very same day as the original plagues of the 3 days of darkness began.
No!
Yes, yes.
Okay,
it's
okay,
on the very same day.
This one, this one we're doing.
April 8th is the very day of the 3 days of darkness plagues began.